Right, I think we'll start. It's 10:05 now, so hopefully anybody that comes in late will be able to be. We'll send the link out later so they can hear it all again then afterwards. But firstly, good morning to everybody. Thank you all for dialing in this morning. Say sorry, it's a little bit clunky. It's the first time we've tried this our end, and it's all new to us as well as everyone else. And it's strange times we're in at the moment. So thank you for making the effort to dial in this morning. We hope you're all safe and well, and that you've been enjoying the nice weather that we've had, albeit that today doesn't look quite so great. But for Baillie Cook, it's very much business as usual at the moment in these strange times. We've got the whole team working securely from home, all set up accordingly. And the main difference for us is obviously that we're unable to come out and see you face to face at the moment, which is something both Charles and myself are missing a lot. And hopefully we'll resume back to business as usual before too long in the future. We also hope that you're finding the regular updates we're sending out useful and informative, and it's something that we intend to keep going for the foreseeable future, especially as we're going through these times. And today really was just an opportunity to try and communicate via a different medium, being the Zoom call and the conference call. And Phoebe, who you can hopefully also see on the screen there from LGT Vestia, has very kindly offered to make herself available today. And we'll be providing a general market update for us as to where we are at the moment in amidst the coronavirus and what's happened in the last quarter. But also we'll be touching around the sustainable investment philosophy that we've spoken to many of you about previously. As well as being one of the investment managers at Vestia, Phoebe also is a partner with the firm and heads up the sustainable investment team, which is an exciting sector that we're very keen to speak to you all about. And it's something that we were going to be covering off in our seminar at Longleat in June, which has now been pushed back to September. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll get that going for September and you'll be able to hear a bit more detail around it then and have a nice day out at the same time. From Baillie Cook's side, our investment committee spend a lot of time looking at the various providers we use and the different options we've got available to us. There's around 250 firms that offer managed portfolio services, and we narrowed it down to a panel of two, of which Vestia are one of them. The filtering process, if you like, to get down to those two is not solely looking at the performance, but also the risk controls of the businesses, the financial strength, and very importantly, the culture of those businesses. And I have to say, we've been delighted with Vestia on all fronts and are very proud to work with them. We obviously would welcome your feedback going forward with regard to this and also other bulletins that we send out, and that will really help us shape the way that we do this going forward. So please do let Charles, myself, or Sarah, or anyone in the team know what your thoughts are and what you'd like more of, less of, and so on, and we'll try and accommodate that as best as possible. So I'm going to hand over to Phoebe now and to give the market update, and then hopefully if Charles is on the call, he'll then come in a bit later on with questions that some of you have raised that you'd like us to raise with Phoebe and get her responses to those. So over to you, Phoebe.
Thanks, Andrew, and good morning, everyone, and thank you very much for having me on this call this morning. So I thought I would talk a little bit about portfolios, specifically the sustainable portfolios in terms of positioning, performance, but also give a bit of an update as to the macroeconomic background that we find ourselves in. So I ran some performance figures this morning, and since the start of the year, the FTSE 100 is down around 25%. But to put that in context, the sustainable balance portfolio, which is our medium risk mandate, is only down around 8.5%. Even our most adventurous mandate, the sustainable adventurous portfolio, it is down around 11.5%. So you can clearly see in a period of extreme market volatility and stress that these portfolios have managed to sort of weather the storm. And that's really down to the risk management that we do internally, but also that the sustainability aspects of the portfolio have actually been able to help them withstand the market volatility that we've seen. But importantly, a longer-term perspective needs to be taken. So if we rewind the clock back to the beginning of last year, so starting at January 1st, 2019, the FTSE 100 is still down around 12% over that time period. So the 2019 plus Q1 and up to yesterday. But the sustainable balance portfolio is up 5%. So if you had invested in a medium risk mandate at the beginning of last year, you'd be standing here today with a performance of plus 5%. So that really puts into context what we have seen over the last couple of months, Yes, markets have fallen fairly dramatically in many cases, but actually, if you've been in a risk-managed portfolio, you could still be sitting on positive performance over that period. So really, the rally that we saw in equity markets last year has compensated for the negative performance that we've seen across markets in the last couple of months during this corona crisis. That's the case for the managed portfolios, the sustainable portfolios, but not the case, as you saw, as I just explained there, but for equity markets as a whole, and the FTSE 100 being a specific example. So over the last couple of months, we've clearly seen the pandemic and the impact of the coronavirus really take hold. It's caused an enormous amount of human travesty and also a huge amount of disruption to us in our everyday lives. To combat that and combat particularly the impact of it, governments and central banks across the world have stepped in. They've stepped in extremely quickly and to an unprecedented level, really to ensure that this health crisis doesn't become a liquidity crisis and then eventually a financial and economic crisis. What governments and central banks have endeavored to do is to effectively build a bridge from one side of this pandemic hitting across an economic shutdown and beyond, in order to isolate the economic impact of the pandemic to a certain area or a certain black hole that we can transcend, rather than letting it become a deep root and deep set recession. And that's really what governments and central banks have endeavored to do. So central banks are able to pull a few levers. There's three primary levers that they're able to use. And that's around the subject of monetary policy. So one of those levers is quantitative easing. We saw a large amount of quantitative easing taking place following the global financial crisis. And we've seen that again in recent months. You've seen quantitative easing announced by Western nations, by the Federal Reserve, which is a central bank in the US, by the Bank of England here in the UK, by the European Central Bank in Europe, but also in China and the Bank of Japan. To give you an idea of magnitude, the amount of the quantitative easing that we've seen announced during the corona crash in 1 week equates to the entire amount of quantitative easing that was announced during the global financial crisis. So it's a magnitude much greater, and central banks have really stepped up quickly in order to ensure liquidity is in the system. Central banks have also cut interest rates to almost zero here in the West, but you've also seen interest rates being cut over in Asian countries, but their interest rates are that bit higher, so they've got a bit further to go and a few more levers at their disposal. And then finally, central banks have also reduced the reserve requirement for lenders. What that means is that banks have to hold less cash on their balance sheets in order to lend out to businesses, again, trying to ensure liquidity is in the system. So all of the measures that central banks via the monetary policy have announced have really been to insulate the financial markets, to ensure financial markets don't have liquidity locks, and therefore we have an evolving economic and financial crisis. Central banks across the world have committed to, in the infamous words of Mario Draghi, do whatever it would take. And there has been coordinated responses. But coupled with that, we've also seen responses from governments. So we have Rishi Sunak here in the UK, often doing updates with regards to how the government here is supporting households, is supporting corporates in order to help them get through the economic shutdown and beyond. But you're also having corresponding action from governments in Europe, particularly in Germany. Germany, a couple of weeks ago, passed a huge package, which is equivalent to around 10% of the GDP of Germany, which is very significant for Germany because they're historically a pretty conservative nation from a fiscal perspective. You've also had Bank of Japan and Shinzo Abe commit to 10% of GDP there. So that's an enormous multi-trillion dollar package, which goes straight through to corporates, straight through to households to try and alleviate the pain of corona from an economic perspective. The last couple of weeks, we've also had announcements from the US. After a bit of wrangling between Democrats and the Republicans, they agreed on a package which is being referred to as phase three. So phase three equates to $2.2 trillion US dollars, which is going into helicopter money. So that's checks for individuals to spend, which is equating to around £1,200 per person for most people. Also, money going straight into the healthcare system, to unemployment insurance benefits and deferred taxes. However, Trump, in his usual manner, is already talking about phase four, so the next stage of stimulus relief that the government want to announce. It's likely to be between another 1 to 2 trillion, which I know is an enormous amount of money to even try and get your head around. 2 trillion equates to around £6,000 per person in terms of relief. Trump wants to spend this phase four package on infrastructure. I mean, of course he does. He's looking at his next election in November. The Democrats are hoping it's going to be, or will be voting for it to be, adding to the virus package relief that's already been announced. What we're seeing across the world really is that governments are now announcing large stimulus packages equating to around 10% of GDP. But where we're expecting this to get to is finally to a package of around 25% of GDP. Where does that figure come from? Well, that across the board really is the amount in terms of time, one quarter of the year that economies are shutting down for. So effectively, governments are trying to plug the hole between one side of economic shutdown and the other. I was looking at Europe's recovery fund this morning. Europe haven't come to a unified decision on how they're going to be providing stimulus. There's talk of a virus recovery fund. Countries like France are really keen to work together to manage to raise the funds and deal with the problem as one unified block rather than as individual nations. Although, like I mentioned, in Germany, other nations as well have announced their own stimulus packages. France has been the largest proponent of working together. And I actually have an interesting quote for you from Macron, which was in the FT yesterday, in terms of how important he believes it has to be that they work together. So this is the quote. "We are at a moment of truth, which is to decide whether the European Union is a political project or just a market project. I think it's a political project. We need financial transfers and solidarity, if only so that Europe holds on." So really, it's the future of Europe that he believes is in the hands of agreeing this virus deal. There's actually a leaders summit next week for European leaders, so we will see if there's more specificity around the plan. And hopefully they'll come to an agreement and ensure that as a unified block, they're able to raise the funds to treat the impact of the crisis. But what else is at play here? Well, the oil price is a big factor. We saw the oil price fall over 76% in Q1 this year. So in the first 3 months of this year, the oil price plummeted. Why was that? Well, there was a disagreement between very senior members of OPEC. They couldn't agree a production cut as a result of the impact of the coronavirus. So you saw a corresponding fall in the oil price. More recently, we have seen an agreement between those members of a cut of 10 million barrels of oil a day for May and June of this year. But actually, because there's so much oil already built up into the system, the logistics of the oil industry, so the pipelines, the tankers, the ships, already have a massive oversupply. So realistically, the oil price isn't going to bounce substantially from here. We look at something called the oil futures. So many businesses buy oil in advance in order to smooth the cost of their production, of their processes. And if you look at the cost of oil at the end of this year on those futures curves, it's only sitting at around $35 a barrel. So to give you some context, oil is currently sitting around 26, and it fell from the heady heights of sort of $60 a barrel at the beginning of the year. So only an incremental increase, really, because there's so much oil in the system and because demand for oil is still going to be low because of the impact of manufacturing of corona. We've also seen an interesting decoupling from the West to the East. The Eastern nations, particularly Asian nations, have dealt with this crisis in a very thorough manner. They've used technology, they've used tracking devices in order to contain the virus. And that's a different way of dealing with things than most of the Western nations have done. We've been seeing a decoupling from Western countries to Eastern countries for the last few years. There's even been talk that you end up with two economic cycles. From the history of time, the economic cycle has been driven by the UK initially and then moving to the US. So when the US is in recession, primarily the rest of the world is caught up in that recession. And we were looking at the possibility that potentially you could come out with these two economic cycles where you have China as one powerhouse and the US as another powerhouse, and actually their economic cycles are decoupled. It'd be interesting to see whether the impact of this virus and the resilience that Asian economies have managed to retain, and also the resilience that the stock market has had in response to the virus in Asia, exacerbates that decoupling of the West to the East. It's something that we're watching and talking about frequently in our investment committee meetings. And the final point really that we need to take into consideration is the amount of cash. So April is being poised as peak pessimism, the month of peak pessimism. And one reflection of that is the amount of cash that investors are raising and having on the sidelines in order to navigate markets and insulate portfolios from that volatility. The portfolios that we run do have a higher level of cash in them at the moment. So to give you an idea, the balanced mandate or the medium risk mandate has around 15% in cash, which is a very high level for us. Ordinarily, we keep it around 3 to 5%. But because we've seen increased volatility over the last couple of years, in fact, we've had that heightened level of cash going into this crisis, which has really helped portfolios perform strongly versus those equity markets. And I gave you the stats earlier. But we've started to increase cash further from those levels. It means that we're able to navigate the volatility easier in an environment where many asset classes are under pressure, but also gives us the dry powder. So as and when we do see opportunities, and I believe they will absolutely present themselves to us over the next couple of months, as volatility continues to impact markets, then we can put some of that cash to work and take advantage of some of the falls that we've seen in equity markets. So more specifically, how are markets reacting? Well, equities, as you'll be probably fairly aware, suffered quite dramatically in March. But since then, we've seen quite a strong rally in some parts of the market that are more insulated from the impact of corona. So those sectors are healthcare, technology, and consumer defensives. Consumer defensives are the items that individuals buy on a regular basis, regardless of whether we're in a recessionary period or an expansionary period. So very much your day-to-day items. They aren't particularly affected by economic cycles. So think of things that you buy for your house, for your larder, for your cupboards. You're going to buy the tinned goods. You're going to buy the cleaning products, regardless of whether you have a bit more money in your pocket or not. In fact, in this economic slowdown, you're buying more of those products because of this move to hoarding and people wanting to be sure that their houses are particularly clean. So those three parts of the market have been very defensive versus rest of the market. As I've already mentioned, Asian stock markets have tended to outperform Western stock markets because of their the way they've treated the virus, the way they've contained the virus. And we've also seen a strong rally, strong performance in what we call safe haven assets. So these are assets like UK government debt, US government debt, and even gold. So when sort of real fear hits equity markets, there's something called a flight to safety. And that means that investors move out of the riskier parts of the market and move into the more safe haven parts of the market. So the holdings in the portfolios that we have in UK government debt, in US government debt, and indirectly through gold have bolstered the portfolio performance. And really over the last few months since the start of the year, those have been the assets that have generated positive performance, so offsetting some of the negative performance that we've had in equity markets. Fortunately, the sustainable portfolios are overweight many of the sectors that I've just described. So the portfolios, sustainable portfolios, have a natural overweight to healthcare. There is a bias in the portfolios to investing in themes around long-term sustainability. And clearly one of those themes is healthcare and societal well-being. So the natural overweight to that part of the market has helped the portfolios perform better than the FTSE 100, for example. The portfolios are also overweight technology. So those stocks have tapped into this stay-at-home trend. And I can go into some of the examples of the stocks later on that have done well. But the overweight to technology as a sector has benefited the portfolios in the last few months. And consumer defensives. Many of the consumer defensive companies that I mentioned have very strong sustainability profiles. So there's an overweight to those types of companies in the portfolios as well. Taking it one step further, looking within sectors, we also have a bias towards good quality businesses. So those are companies with strong balance sheets, those with low levels of debt, low levels of leverage, and those companies that are able to produce on an ongoing basis high levels of recurring cash. So these are businesses that are more resilient, more robust, and are much better placed to ride out the impact of Corona, be that the economic shutdown that we've already seen and are likely to see here in the UK for the next 3 weeks plus, but also what's going to happen beyond. So many investors have started switching out of companies that are less financially robust and into the companies that are, and that's benefited the stock prices of those financially robust companies. The sustainable portfolios that we run already have a natural overweight to those good quality businesses, because those good quality businesses also tend to have good ESG profiles. So good environmental profiles, i.e. they source their raw materials from sustainable sources, they recycle their waste, they think about how much water is being used in the production process and try and reuse any excess water. They have good social profiles, so they look after their workers and local communities, and they have tend to have good governance structures. So often, companies that have good sustainability profiles and good operational sustainability are also those ones that are in a good financial position. So that's why we have this natural overweight to those quality businesses. And all of those types of companies have helped, have performed better than your average company. And so that's helped the portfolios in this period of market stress. Turning specifically to healthcare, I thought I'd give you some couple of examples of companies. 3M is a company that we hold in the portfolios via the funds, and that's been instrumental to the production and the distribution of PPE equipment across the world. We also have a company called Gilead in the portfolio that's performed well from a stock price perspective and is directly tapped into producing a vaccine, but also is already delivering treatment for the crisis in what's called phase three of the corona crisis. But you must be aware that it's not all healthcare businesses that have done well. Many healthcare businesses operate in non-corona areas, of course, diagnostics, for example, non-COVID-19 related diagnostics. And so because healthcare budgets have primarily been cut across the board for this year in non-corona areas and even beyond, companies that really rely on funding are under more pressure. So that's why you really want active managers, and we employ all active managers in the portfolios that we run so that they can pick and choose the companies that are going to benefit and potentially not, both now but in the years to come. Looking at technology, companies like Microsoft, SAP, Computer System, Alphabet, which owns Google, Adobe, which you use to open PDF documents, have all benefited from the stay-at-home trade. Many of these businesses have strong sustainability profiles, particularly a company like Microsoft, uses 100% renewable energy to power all of the data servers, and really is focused on, for example, responsibly sourcing the raw materials that go into their physical electronic products. One area particularly is cobalt and lithium, which is made from cobalt, which is mined in the DRC, so the Democratic Republic of the Congo, an area which has a historically very poor health and safety record for mining, particularly employing young workforces, very young workforces. So Microsoft has really increased the transparency and visibility of the sourcing of all of these products in order to have an extraordinary push towards making this area of the world more sustainable. Because we need cobalt and lithium to go in everything from a computer to an electric car battery. So the need for this area to be more sustainable is very important. And Microsoft have absolutely pioneered and leaded the charge on making transparency in that area better. Tesla is a company that's also at the forefront of producing sustainable products, particularly their electric cars, of course. And actually have seen a very strong rally in the stock price since mid-March. And I thought I'd mention it in case anyone has noticed and really thought, why suddenly, given that oil prices are lower, maybe petrol is cheaper, therefore, why are people suddenly interested in buying electric cars? Well, there, it's not that they had an increase in demand per se over the last 2 weeks, but actually the Tesla stock price has had a buy recommendation put on it by Goldman Sachs. So one of the most important banks in the world has come out publicly and said, we think Tesla is a stock that you should hold, a stock that you should buy. So as a result of that, the stock price has rallied and actually doubled since mid-March. We've also seen some drone footage from their site in Shanghai, which shows clear expansion of production. And that's added to the excitement by investors for Tesla. So following on, what changes have we made in portfolios? We've reduced exposure to UK inflation-linked debt. So that's inflation-linked UK government debt that's linked to the value of inflation. We see the outlook for inflation as very, very benign here in the UK. In fact, so benign that we believe it will undershoot any estimations from the market. Why is that? Well, we do have quantitative easing going on, which potentially over the medium term could cause inflation. And we have clear supply chain disruption going on as a result of the corona crisis. But we believe overcoming all of that is this significant demand shock that we've seen. So demand obviously is at almost zero for many goods during this economic shutdown. But we believe that demand will continue to be weak going through the crisis and beyond. So as a result of that, we believe inflation here in the UK will be at low levels. We've also reduced exposure to the UK, and that happened at the beginning of this month. It's been going on for a couple of months, that trade, and we've been gradually reducing exposure to the UK market. That's really as a result of the lack of opportunities for sustainable investment here in the UK. If you think of the makeup of the FTSE 100, it's predominantly miners, commodities, major banks. It doesn't really shout sustainability. There are some interesting opportunities in the small and mid-cap space, so slightly smaller businesses, but we don't want to have too much exposure to that part of the market because it is more volatile. So we've been reducing exposure to the UK and increasing exposure to high quality global businesses, very tapped into the sustainability trend. We've also, as I mentioned earlier, been increasing cash in portfolios, and we did that as a result of selling down some of the index-linked gilt exposure. For the reasons I just mentioned. So sort of in summary, and before we open up for questions, the support that governments and central banks have given to economies and societies, we believe provides a positive outlook for classic equity markets, classic asset classes, both equities and selectively corporate bonds. If we think of this time last time around when quantitative easing was happening and commencing, you saw a corresponding very strong rally in risk assets. Whilst the situation is different, the scenario has changed, and it will take some time for us to get through the corona impact on economies. We believe that the stock market is in a good place, and there is a strong and positive outlook over the medium term for continuing to invest in the equity market. If anything, the presence of this virus that has caused human travesty and unprecedented disruption has actually raised the profile of sustainability, and particularly the S of the ESG, so ESG standing for environmental social governance. In 2019, the environment, climate change, plastics, resource depletion really increased visibility, was very high on the agenda by the end of the year, thanks to Greta Thunberg, thanks to many corporates and also governments. You even saw in the spring budget this year, the UK government allocate billions of pounds to everything from a carbon capture scheme to planting trees and to an electric vehicle infrastructure here in the UK. So the environment, quite rightly, has risen in terms of visibility over the last few years. But what this pandemic has brought with it is showing the importance of the S of ESG, social. And I think now more than ever, investors are choosing to allocate capital to companies that are thinking and acting responsibly, and those that are looking to actually provide solutions to some of our biggest challenges, be them environmental or, as this crisis has shown, importantly, social and specifically medical. The sustainable portfolios are facilitating this allocation of capital, both through the equity market, through everything from pharmaceuticals to companies that are providing solutions to local societies, but also in the bond market. And I think this is a fantastic demonstration of the importance that financial markets play in really finding a solution to long-term sustainability.
Thank you, Phoebe. That's perfect. I think a lot of the questions that we had raised, actually, you've covered as you've gone through, to be fair. So I'll pick a couple out, but just conscious of time that we said half an hour and we're roughly there now anyway. One of the ones that has come out several times from people is now a good time to invest? And should people with money already invested be doing anything other than just riding the market out as they are at the moment?
Yes, I think clients invested cash already, time in the market is more important than timing the market. It is, as everyone's very aware, extremely difficult to time your entry point. So I think if you're invested, remain invested, ride it out. So you've really seen from the data I gave earlier in the call, the benefit from being in a multi-asset portfolio, in a managed portfolio, versus just investing in an equity index like the FTSE 100. And for those that are looking to invest, I'm sure you recommend this within your financial planning, but tranches of money going in and gradually drip feeding over time. Because whilst we will see a recovery, we don't know how long it'll take. And there will likely be volatility along the way. There's virus data to come out, there's macroeconomic data to come out, and there's company earnings figures to come out. So all of those may create little dips that will provide interesting and beneficial opportunities for you to drip feed money in.
Tend to agree. And I think we're aiming to wrap up now, Phoebe, if that's okay. Just one last question, which is a bit of fun, really. It's just a couple of clients have asked around what's a prediction for where the FTSE 100 may end the year. And it's something that we're thinking we may put out to clients as a bit of a sweepstake in the coming weeks and with a prize for who gets closest to it. But what would be your call for 31st of December this year, FTSE 100 close?
Well, we've seen a very strong rally in the FTSE today, opened up around 3.5%. So I'm going to be bullish and say 7,600.
Well, I hope you're right. Certainly hope you're right. Thank you very much again for everybody for dialing in. And thank you very much for your time this morning, Phoebe. I know there's been some problems. I've seen messages pinging up that some people have had trouble getting in this morning. And we will send a link out for the audio version of this to everybody a bit later on today. And hopefully we'll do another one in the near future. Thank you very much, everyone.
Great. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Phoebe.